Oh, yeah. My goodness.
Well, you actually have a director who you do work with on this one.
You're not messing around, by the way.
No,
this is a weapon, too.
You came to get down.
Yeah, exactly.
She could fuzzy wand you to death with this.
Yeah.
I can sweep, I mean,
so,
you know, clean, too.
So I'm always intrigued when there's kind of rapport with a director that evolves during the process.
Yeah.
Because he talked about how he wasn't going to make this as much of a comedy as it became.
Right.
And you sort of gave them
ammunition. So it's on me.
It's all on you, man.
It's my fault.
It's your credit. Because they were going
to
make
a more serious
film noir, and you were kind of jokey in the read-through and then in early auditions with the other people, like the girls. And he kept going to Anthony and going, you got to write some of this into the movie.
Oh, okay.
And so
it just makes sense of a lot now.
Yeah.
This makes sense of a lot of looks behind the camera. Now that you're telling me that.
So talk about doing, quote, a serious film noir that then becomes kind of a little bit insane and funny.
I just want to say that there is a giant talking bee and smoking bee in this. So I can't take full responsibility for the comedy element. And I don't know how serious and hard-boiled it was meant to be, if that's the case. But
good point.
I read it and I thought there's a great opportunity here for a lot of physical comedy, and it's you know, obviously everyone reads the script differently, and I was a little nervous going into it because I didn't know how that was going to sit with the way that everyone else had read the film. You know, I'm working with Russell Crowe, and I don't know that that's something that he, I don't know that that's how he envisioned the film. But on our first day working together was the bathroom stall scene, and I went to set early to try and work out the, because I wanted to do this door thing, and I was working it out, and I thought I was alone, and I smelled smoke, and I looked behind the door, and it's Russell, and he's smoking and watching me, and he very seriously says, I think if you hit the door with the other leg, it'll bounce back farther. And I realized, and then we immediately were having the most serious conversation about the dumbest thing ever, and I knew this was going to be fine, and it would be fun. You know?
Well, he's got a wicked, sometimes malicious in it, and I say that as a compliment, sense of humor.
Yeah, he's very funny. Everyone is on the you know, Shane obviously and Joel and, you know, and Gao. Everybody had a great sense of humor. We just decided to have fun making this one, you know.
He's a big guy, Russell Crowe. What's it like doing these kind of physical scenes with him, you know, where he beats you up and that kind of thing?
You know, it smarts. You know, it smarts a little. He's
don't
very good.
Don't embarrass me.
Oh, okay, God.
Don't say anything embarrassing. He's saying anything embarrassing me. I want to stop it right now.
Wow. Thank you for that, Joel. Ladies and gentlemen, Joel Silver. Can we have him removed? But there you go. I mean, that's like, Joel was my first exposure to what Hollywood was like behind the camera when he burst into the scene in Who Framed Roger Rabbit and fires Roger Rabbit, you know?
Yeah.
So between him and growing up on Shane Black movies, those guys are part of my cinematic DNA. So, you know, for me, it was a great opportunity to get to work with them. It's, you know, unfortunate that he doesn't feel
like
the same
that.
Way.
Well, can I ask about working with Shane Black? Because I'm doing a profile of him, so
okay.
I'm curious to know, what's he like?
Like a legal profile, or...?
I don't know. On the radio.
All right, okay.
That's what this is for.
This is
NPR,
official.
I'm sorry.
Suspicious. Oh, is it?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I should get kind of get closer and talk more quietly.
It's for the news.
Yeah.
Tell me about Shane Black. What's he like?
He's like a mystery wrapped in an enigma. And, you know, He's his own man, you know. He's always kind of done it his own way, and he's a real, you know, was a student, and now could be a professor on noir and you know, certainly, like, you know, he's a real. I mean, you go to his house and it's just a giant library of everything that he's ever read and loved and. and he's just incredibly knowledgeable, and he's found a way, he finds a way to synthesize all these things into these movies that are somehow pay homage to all of that and yet are completely in his own voice.
How would you describe his style?
You mean like his style, like of dressing? A lot of
anything.
A lot of loud colored pants. A lot of loud colored pants.
Pants left over from the '70s.
Maybe.
His style of writing, directing.
His style of reading is interesting because he has a. He just moves one contact and this like reads very like this, which is really.
What?
Disconcerting when you're talking to him, because he'll just sort of be talking and he'll just go and then start doing that.
Are you making that up?
No,
is that
that's
real?
No, it's, you can't make that up.
That's bizarre.
I wish I could make that up.
Creeping me out. Like,
so the father-daughter relationship in this film is at the heart of the whole thing. Can you talk a little bit about establishing that relationship?
Can I just finish if you're doing a profile, honestly, I think I just want to say that I really love the way that Shane thinks about story and the way that he follows he follows character at the same time. He's spinning a lot of plates. And, you know, like, I think in this movie it's a great example of, you know, if a shot goes off, in most movies it's just a missed shot, you know. But in Shane's world, he thinks, well, if it missed that person, well, where did it go? And he'll follow it. Well, maybe it went into the next room and it hit somebody that was reading. And then for the rest of the scene, you'll hear that person screaming while the scene is going on, you know. It's dark, but it's realistic, and it also is funny and absurd, and there's so many dimensions to it. And even we had a big scene in the film that we ended up shooting very differently than it was written, but it was supposed to be a kind of the moment, like the Butch and Sundance moment, where they both characters are in this big shootout. And right before we shot the scene, and we were all prepared, and the stunt guys had a whole plan, and we were ready to go, and then Shane goes, you know, they always catch the gun when you throw it to the movies. What if it went out the window? And I could hear Joel having a heart attack, and you know, he just was like, no, because in Joel's mind, that at least he could sell that. It was two guys shooting guns out a window. That was going to work. But now Shane had thrown this huge curveball. But of course he was right, and of course that's it's much more interesting to see what happens in that scenario, and so much more fun for us as actors to try and figure out what would happen. And it ends with, you know, me handing Russell bullets out of a cookie jar, and you know, it took just a left turn, but his movies always do. You know, you think they're going right and they move left, and he's always surprising you, and yet you kind of feel like, I think in this film you're laughing, but you're somehow emotionally invested and moved by some of the dramatic portions of the story as well. So
that was hilarious, that gun thing.
Yeah, that's
a little rough.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Father daughter relationship.
Yeah.
How to talk about working with? Is it, how do you say?
Angowrie.
Yeah. And how you establish that relationship, and the fact that you had been a child actor, did that come in? Did that help you work with her?
It was less a father-daughter, more of like a mother-son situation, because she's about as mature as I was like a year ago already. So she's just, that was one of those great situations where, you know, you don't know how you're going to play a certain aspect of your character or a certain part of the storyline, and an actor comes in and they just, because of the virtue of who they are and how they are and how they're playing their part, it just gives you part of your character. You know exactly how you're going to play those scenes now. So I was thrilled to work with her, and I'm sure she's going to be, you know, the boss of all of us pretty soon.
You know that you have a lot of memes and the
right.
Hair girl
yeah.
stuff going around, but there's something that I know it's going to be like the next trend, and it's your high-pitched screams.
Oh, right.
It's like...
Thank you.
It's basically a
Thank
trademark. So how do you feel about that, if that becomes something? And how did you... I mean, because your screams are something, man. It's like...
it's, that's funny.
So, you know...
It's a signature.
Yeah. So how do you feel about that? And, you know, now that I'm telling you...
Well, look, that's just how I... react to things. If I see a spider, that's how I scream. And it's been traumatizing, honestly. And so I'm happy to make lemonade out of those lemons, finally. Maybe make a little scratch off of that. It just seemed, you know, I didn't know they were going to include that in the film. The scene ended with Russell breaking my arm, and I just thought I'd end it that way, just for myself. And then suddenly I watched the trailer for the movie, and it's like how the movie opens. But I'm glad they did it, I think.
And the weird thing is, here we are in the audience, and because of your scream, your primal high-pitched scream,
right, yeah.
We're all laughing, and you're having your arm broken as a character.
Yeah.
So that's part of the energy of this film that's really surprising. We're laughing at shit that we should not be laughing at.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of it.
And the high pitch, like, it was born for me in the Pines, in the place beyond the Pines, when you were robbing the bank.
Oh, yeah, and I started...
That's
true, I did.
So...
Yeah. Well, thank you for noticing. Because... No one else has mentioned it.
So I'm intrigued by this idea of encouraging or generating laughs over things that are transgressive.
Okay.
Because this movie does it.
Yeah.
And you guys, you and Russell are perfect for this in this kind of crazy...
I think that's also Shane's style, you know, is that I think Kiss Kiss Bang Bang was that way, and, you know, a lot of those Lethal Weapon films were as well. Or it even goes back to the first Shane Black film I ever saw was Monster Squad, you know. And maybe the first line I ever quoted as a kid, which was, you know, kick him in the nards. And goes, Wolfman ain't got nards. And they kick him, and Wolfman crumbles to his knees, and they go, Wolfman's got nards. It's funny.
It is funny.
Yeah. It shouldn't be, but my God, it is.
There's a lot of physical scenes in this. How much of it was you actually acting or the stunt? Especially falling over the balconies.
I think I did all... I did most of that. The physical comedy element was a big draw for me, and I just grew up on those films. It's something I always wanted to do, so I wanted to make sure that I did all of those things. But I did have a great stunt guy who was... I actually wanted to give him a little bit of a break, too, because he'd just come off the set of Fury, where he was impaled by a bayonet by his best friend.
Oh.
Meanwhile, 2 weeks later, he was there and ready to get down, so he's a...
You're saying he literally got impaled?
He did, he was
accident.
Impaled, yeah.
Okay.
By a bayonet. And helicoptered off the set and almost lost him, but then he, you know, I guess he's, because he's Australian, but he just...
he just...
brushed it off and came to set 2 weeks later and worked with us. But he also had played the Scarecrow in a theatrical version of Wizard of Oz, so he was a great match because I wanted the character to have a kind of, you know, silent, you know, that kind of physical comedy that I grew up on, and he had some experience with it.
Are you planning to do something else in your side as a director? Because I love Lost River. So
oh, thank
I just,
you.
Yeah, so
thanks.
I just want to know if you have something in mind.
Yeah, I have two that I'm just getting ready, and we'll see which one's ready first.
Okay.
Yeah. But
are they thrillers, something different?
I think they're different. You know, they're still evolving, so... But I'm excited that you're looking forward to it. I am too. Can't wait to get back in there.
Is the Blade Runner thing happen?
It is, but there's a sniper on that roof. So if I say anything, that's it for me.
That's it. Can you describe your character in this film?
He's a schmuck. I heard that word more than any other word on set every day. They almost stopped saying cut, and they just would just say, what a schmuck. And I knew the scene was over. So.
I know a lot of your movies happen in L.A. Is there something that you have about L.A. that you love because of that, or it's something
I think I spent
happened?
So much time as a kid dreaming of coming here and wondering what was happening here and seeing it in movies and, you know, reading about it. It's just, And in living here, there's so many facets to it. I'm always amazed by that. I always find a new side of LA that I didn't know existed. And I think I'm always excited when I realize that, and then I can find a way to reflect that in the film, you know, whether it's from what it's like to drive around at night and trying to, in your car, and trying to get that feeling into drive, or just the history, the romantic history that we tried to put into La La Land. For me, it just keeps revealing itself, and I wish we could shoot here more, because we end up having to try and capture that somewhere else. And
then, in this case, Georgia for this film.
Yeah, which I don't know why they call it Hotlanta, because it was minus 10 degrees. And I think the best acting we did in the film was just acting warm. That's not an easy task.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, everybody.
Thank you very much.
Have a good one.
Cheers.
Thank you.